CMS Music with Chris Aiken, and I, of course, am Chris Aiken, and joining me today is a true legend, and I mean a legend on the guitar. He has a brand new release called Inviolate, and he puts the Vi in Inviolate, of course. He is Mr. Steve Vi. Steve, how are you, sir?
All right, doing good, Chris. Thanks for having me, brother.
Absolutely, man. Well, Steve, you have this great new release, and you have innovated the guitar once again with a new crazy guitar that we'll talk about, and some really interesting things on the new release Inviolate. So talk a little bit about this one, because it really seems like you pushed yourself, not that you don't always push yourself, but it seems like you really pushed yourself into some new directions this time.
Well, I think the directions I went were kind of natural for my course. Okay. You know, if you do something through life and you kind of stick with it and you're interested in evolving it, it just happens naturally. So I think, on Inviolate, it's been many years of being out there and doing it. And every time an artist releases a record, it's usually, they like to feel that it's the best that they've done so far. So
sure.
I'm in that club.
certainly. Well, when you decide to write, and I mean, you have such a history that I'm assuming you can kind of pick and choose when you decide to put music out. Now, you're not on like a record company schedule or something. Do you decide to write because you have a new sound or a new something that you want to present? Or do you do it because you're a professional musician and you feel like it's time, or a little bit of both? Or how do you make the decision when it's time to put new music together?
Well, different musicians will navigate through their career in releasing records and touring differently. The conventional way to do it is you get a record contract, and the record contract says, on this day, you will deliver this record, and on this day, which is usually 18 months later or something like that, you will deliver another record. So there's parameters within a deal that can dictate when an artist needs to deliver a record, and that usually will dictate the touring cycles and stuff like that. But I've never really adhered to that for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
because I never felt, I was that kid that would wake up in the morning to go to school. My father would come in the room and he'd wake me up, and I would just not get out of bed. He'd come in a second time, right? He'd wake me up again. I wouldn't get out of bed. He'd come in a third time and grab my foot and drag me off the bed until I was laying on the floor. And then he'd leave the room and I'd get back into bed. And then he would come in and dump water on me. because I swore I would never have a job where somebody was going to tell me when I should wake up in the morning. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So the same, I guess the same thing. And now I get up at 5:30 every morning. I love it. but the same thing, I think, just flowed into my creative mode. I don't think that you can, for some people you can say be creative now, but for me it was always like I want to do this now, now I want to record this song, now I want to make this record, now I want to write this book, now I want to make this record company, now I want to, I never really adhered to those contractual obligations.
Sure.
No. And the labels don't care, I mean, for me at least, because that's my deal, basically. And plus, it's rare that I'm signed to a label. I've always been pretty independent.
Sure. When you do start creating, let me rephrase this. I know a million musicians that they never put down their phone, their computer, whatever, that are always creating. They're always recording riffs. They're always keeping ideas together. Are you one of those guys, or are you somebody that literally sits down and decides, okay, this is the time that I'm going to put together 8, 9, 10 songs to release to the public?
Yeah, I do that.
Oh, okay.
So now I'm going to make a record that maybe, the amount of songs varies. I just know that these days I don't want to really go over 45 minutes, 46
sure.
minutes. It's too much for people, but I think that what your questioning is, do I reserve my creative time for when I choose to make a record?
Correct.
Yeah. No, No, I enjoy being constantly creative, you know, and if it's not in a song, maybe it's in a composition, maybe it's in an investment, because I, you know, there's that part of our lives that we got to deal with, you know, and so I'm always trying, musically, I'm always, not always, but a lot of the time I'm imagining.
Okay. Certainly.
And when I'm not, I'm actually trying to play what I was imagining.
Right. No question. Well, Steve, talking a little bit of Inviolate, the biggest, I guess probably the biggest piece of this record that people aren't going to see is the fact that you had some injuries, some legitimate injuries to overcome in order to get to putting this material together. So talk a little bit about your shoulder and your finger and the the various things that you kind of went through to get to playing again and playing well again.
Sure. Not that I ever looked forward to talking about my injuries in the press, but perhaps it might be helpful to others. If sure. You know. So I'm a pretty healthy guy, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. when I was back in the 80s, I suffered from some neck problems, some spine, you know, I had a surgery on my neck.
Sure.
And then my lower back, this kind of stuff. But it was all very successful, and I've been doing great. I think what happened was I was working out, and I wasn't paying attention, and I was doing chest flies, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It started to compromise. For like a year and a half, you know, I'm just like thinking, oh, I'll just work through this pain. So there's the message, folks. Don't try to work through the wrong kind of pain, because right. It doesn't work. And so it just started to get to the point where it was, I had to go to the doctor, and then there's various procedures you can do. One of them is physical therapy, tried that, didn't work. One of them is stem cell injections, and the shoulder was too far gone because there was three tendons that were torn. So at the same time, I had developed trigger finger in my thumb, and this is an odd kind of a condition where the... you've got a, you know, a canal basically that the, I'm not sure of all the technical
right.
questions, but the cables run through.
Okay.
And they can get frayed, and then your finger starts triggering. But the surgery was very simple. They go in and they just make a little cut, and then boom, all done. Sure. And the trigger finger, it was weird because it actually triggers. It goes clink, clink,
oh,
clink.
Wow.
And then once it was fixed, it was like fixed. And I would have let it go, but it froze and I couldn't play. So I had these, luckily, it was locked down. So
yeah.
No worries. I went in, I got the shoulder and the finger right about the same time. And as I was healing, I was wearing this sling that's called a knapsack because the doctor that created it was named Dr. Knapp.
Okay.
So I made the knapsack. And I only had one hand, you know, obviously.
Sure.
And I started playing a new guitar that came in, and I thought, hey, I'm going to write a song here with one hand. So that actually, I made it a productive situation. And my shoulder healed, and then I tore another tendon.
Jeez.
That was with the pizza oven. But anyway, don't worry. Steve Vai is doing very well. And
sure.
I'm looking forward to getting out there and kicking ass, you know.
Absolutely. You know, real quick, I don't know that people would understand really how important, not important, but how difficult it can be to play with your shoulder being, you know, injured. I a contemporary of yours, John Levin, I don't know if you know John or not. He plays with Dokken. He's Dokken's guitar player.
And
he had the same sort of a thing of like, 8-10 years ago where he had some surgery on his shoulder because he had from playing just the weight of the guitar and the playing kind of wore on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And he was hurt for probably 18-19 months, and he was still trying to play gigs, and he was just dying at the end of gigs, you know. But yet here you are, you go and have surgery, you have this problem, and what do? Instead of playing a lighter guitar, you come back with this monstrosity called the Hydra, which has to be, I don't know anything about this, I'll be honest, Steve, I'm not even, I can pick and noodle very, very little on a guitar, but I can look at that Hydra and tell it's very heavy. You know, is it?
You would be correct.
Yeah, I mean, talk a little bit about this thing, man. It's an improbable instrument, man. It's crazy.
You know, I'm such a sucker for theater. You know,
mm-hmm.
I love trying to put on the best show I can, and as a result, my mind kind of like I have to. You got to invest in some production.
Sure.
And, you know, I can't really invest in the kind of production that some big bands invest in because we travel simply. Sure. But I can make all sorts of weird guitars.
Okay.
And those are entertaining, but they're not valid unless I can play a piece of music on them. So about 5 years ago, I was watching, what's with Mel Gibson? Those movies
he does. Braveheart or Lethal Weapon or?
No, the ones in the desert. Come on.
Not sure.
I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, they're in the desert. Mad Max.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, how could we forget that?
Yeah.
So Mad Max, there's this one scene where they're going through the desert and there's this guy on the front of this truck and he's got a guitar and he's flailing about. And
okay.
I saw that and I said, that's pretty cool, but I could do something cooler than that, you know? And right at that moment, the idea came. And it wasn't for the way the Hydra looked, because I didn't know at the time. I just knew right then I wanted to design a really far out steampunk style guitar that had a 12-string neck that had fretless half of it, and then a 7-string neck, and then a bass neck with E and A string fretless, and 13 harp strings that you can strum. And there's all sorts of... So I took that idea, and I took the... some clippings and stuff of some steampunk fashion, and I sent it to Ibanez, and they did a rendering of the Hydra. And when I saw the rendering, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, you guys are going to build that? And it's like, yes, we are. And we went back and forth for a little while, done some points, but then I got the guitar about a year and a half ago, and I was stunned. And when I saw it, they had really, the engineers over at Hoshino, Ibanez, really kind of broke their own molds, you know what I mean? Just they like threw all convention, all risk, all, you know, out the window, and just employed pure passion and made this instrument. It's much greater than I even imagined, because it's got all of these features. There's a whole synthesizer, besides all the thing I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a synthesizer guitar section. It's got piezos. It's got sustainers. It's got sample and hold features. It's really quite a technical marvel. So I knew I had to record a piece of music with it that could stand on its own as a piece of music. And sure. I envisioned myself playing this thing with all my arms, you know, like I could see in my head just how it could work, you know, by playing all of the necks and creating a piece of music with it. So I was standing in the studio for about a year and a half. I had it on a stand, and I just walk past it every now and then and get chills, you know?
Right.
I'm like, there it is. What am I going to do? So one day I carved out 6 weeks and sat down behind the Hydra, and I just started motoring, you know? Mm-hmm. And when you listen to the track Teeth of the Hydra, which is the first song on Inviolet, all the bass that you hear and the 7-string guitar and the 12-string guitar and the harp strings, it's all performed on the Hydra in one performance. And it's kind of like juggling chainsaws, you know what I mean? Because you miss one thing and
sure,
you're derailed. But I will tell you this, my brilliant tech, Thomas Nordig, figured out this way with a waist strap that the Hydra hangs on. So all the weight is on your waist.
Okay.
And not on your shoulders at all, but it's so heavy. When you take a step in one direction, it thinks that you're going that way, so it helps you out.
Nice.
I mean, it goes, you want to go that way? All right, here we go.
So, given that this, the Hydra, do you now look at like Rick Nielsen and go, my God, how does he play this 10 neck guitar now?
Well, he's another creative, you know, yeah. And I love what he does with all these imaginary, you know, the guitars that he has built. I don't know if he plays all of them
right
in a song. That might be the difference.
Sure. Do you think that you're going to be able to play the Hydra track live?
Well, you know, I'm experimenting with that. I'm just starting now. The first thing I want to do is try to make a video.
Okay.
Because you have to see it. You can hear the track and go, oh, I like that track or I don't like that track. But you have to see it because it's unbelievable unless you see it. So I think, you know, I mean, I see people wielding three neck guitars online, you know, these little mm-hmm. acoustic guitars and stuff. And it's fantastic, you know, but this is very aggressive. So I've got it on a stand right now.
Sure.
The way I used it when I was recording. And I'm trying to get, because it was a while ago that I recorded it. And now I got to get it all under my arms so I could play it all the way through. Because when right. I recorded it, I did it in sections.
Sure.
Well, it was too much to play all the way through. And then I'm going to see if I can hold the guitar and actually at least look like I'm playing the part for a video.
Okay.
Maybe I will be able to, because once on a stand, I can do it. But once it's hanging on your body, all the relationships between the strings and your hands, it changes. So there's going to be an adjustment. And plus, if you're shooting a video, it's usually not that accurate when
right.
you're actually playing, you know, you're cheating. So I have to be able to play it perfectly in order to even cheat it. And then I'm going to bring it into rehearsals and see if we have time to work it in the first leg of the tour.
Okay.
And if I can, I might have to use a stand for the first leg. Or maybe I'll just get out there and kill it right off the bat. I don't know yet. Yeah.
Sure. Well, Steve, with Inviolate, the one song that really jumped out to me from giving it a listen was what I'll say is a surprising track from you, which is Greenish Blues. And not necessarily because you've never touched blues style before, because you have, but you've never, this is like the first time I can remember, and I'll be honest, I don't know that I've heard every piece of music you've ever done, but this is the first time I can remember that you really took traditional blues and made a complete song out of it. Was that a purpose move, or was it just what you felt at the time when you were putting it together? It just seems like an odd choice for you, I guess.
Well, Chris, I think you're correct. I don't recall ever recording anything so bluesy, but it's odd to me that people are pointing it out as being uncharacteristic of me, because it's so me, what I'm playing. So I'll give you a little background on that.
Okay.
When I was young, I wasn't so much I liked the blues, but I didn't want to play like traditional blues.
Sure.
I had an aversion to anything that was traditional, you know. So through life, I've come to appreciate great blues, but I've never spent any focused time on being an authentic type of a blues player. But everything I do is based on the blues, really. Like, for instance, the first scale I ever learned was a blues scale, and everything was derived from that for me, even to this day. So what we do when we're on tour, we have this great policy where when I come to the stage for sound check, the band is already sound checked, and my guitar is handed to me, and it's hot, and it's ready to go, and I don't know what I'm going to play. The band doesn't know. And I just start playing, and we record it all.
Okay.
And we do this every show. So, like, the last show, we did, like, I don't know, 250 shows. So I've got all of these sound check recordings, and I come home after the tour, and I go through them. And some of them are real crap, you know. But some of them have some really great moments. And Greenish Blues was right there, just as it is. I re-recorded it, but virtually, I'd say 80% of the solo was what I jammed live
wow.
in the sound check. So that kind of blues playing is very, very natural to me. I think that when you apply it to in the context of traditional blues type changes, mm-hmm. then it turns into, what is he doing?
Sure.
He doesn't do that. But yeah, I mean, to hear any kind of traditional blues from me, you would have to hold your breath for a long time.
Right. Certainly. Well, Steve, obviously probably the biggest news in guitar world the last year and a half or so is the passing of Eddie Van Halen, and it had an effect on, I think, probably everybody that holds a guitar right now, on he did on in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. I have to imagine for you, maybe even a little more, because you were the guy that sort of replaced him when David brought you into his solo band. You know, a lot of people were like, this is the Eddie Van Halen replacement, which was you. And for whether that's right or not, it's just what the perception was.
Yeah.
So for you, how did his passing affect you? And what was it that, about Eddie's playing, if anything, that was so special to you as a contemporary that played, you know, learned to play his music professionally for professional consumption?
Well, Chris, you know, I'm not unlike the average Edward fan in that he really had an effect. You know, for Edward fans that really were touched by him, it's inexplicable, obviously. You can try to use words, but it doesn't really work. It's sure. Like that with many things. So I have a different position in that, yeah, one might say that I replaced the guitar behind the voice, you know.
Sure.
What I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just like academics to me.
Okay.
When it comes to the way I felt about Edward and the mourning of his loss, I'm a fan like everybody else, you know.
Sure.
And I feel the way they do. But I know also, like many people, everything in this world is coming and going and coming and going and coming and going.
Sure.
Right? And if it doesn't go, it only means you went before it. So, and we just don't know when.
Right.
You know? So that's something that helps me to get through loss, because it's going to happen.
Sure.
So, but it was a beautiful, beautiful, amazing ride that he had. And he just delivered so much. And, you know, he had a great run. It's not like he died at 27.
Sure.
And we don't want to see anybody like that. You know, we want to squeeze every note out of him, you know. But for me, it was a complete honor to be able to play those parts. I mean, if you're a guitar player and you're a fan of that band, you know that those are some of the coolest guitar parts written. Yeah. In rock and roll, because they're like perfect little arrangements, you know, like they fall so well on your hands. They'll never sound like Edward, but
right.
They're great songs to play on the guitar because they're complete, and you become a better player when, especially like a position that I was in where I was playing his parts to his fans, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I had to pay deep respect to those parts. And in so doing, I discovered a really great ride there, because you have to focus. It has to improve your playing.
Sure.
So I was really lucky in all that.
Sure. And you know, the interesting thing is, of all the people, and you know this, every person that plays rock or metal guitar right now learns Eruption or, you know, Ain't Talking About Love, whatever. They, you know, every single karaoke bar, every single band does a Van Halen cover here and there. You're probably the only guy on the planet that's ever been judged on how you play that stuff. You know, like really, truly judged.
Well, based on the eyes of the judger, I guess, but I've never played Eruption.
Oh, really?
No, I transcribed it when I was, before, you know, when I was working with Frank, and then after Frank, I was transcribing to make a couple of bucks here and there. And, I was hired by one of the magazines to transcribe it, but I still didn't play it. I just listened to it and wrote it down.
Okay.
And what was your comment again?
I was just going to say, you're the only person that was ever judged.
Oh, judged. Well, I think that for me, what happened, I didn't judge myself. And that was the most important thing, because if I was judging myself, I would be putting myself against Edward Van Halen. And that's, doesn't make any sense to me.
Sure.
You know, because I had my own voice just like every other guitar player, and to try to change that to mimic a genius like him just didn't seem to make sense. So I threw all that away and just gave it everything I had, mm-hmm. and clobbered it. You know, I mean, I delivered the best I could. And I believe, from my perspective, I don't even think the fans were making a big judgment, because Edward is Edward. Yeah. How can you possibly compare him to somebody? You know, it's unless that person's trying to sound like him.
Sure.
Now people will say, I mean, I've heard tons and tons of people going back and forth about the two of us.
Sure.
Which mm-hmm. is kind of fun to listen to, but sure. I think that I was really fortunate, because I felt by at least the majority of the people that I was being accepted.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know? No, I saw the tour. I saw Eat 'Em and Smile, the tour, and you know, you guys in Cinderella, and it was amazing. It was great. It was the continuation of Van Halen in some respect. You know, so it was a great tour, and you played phenomenally, as you always do.
Thank you.
Sure.
I did my best. Doing that record was an education for me in tone also.
Sure.
Because I knew that people were going to obviously be listening mm-hmm. to that tone. And before that, I spent precious little time on tone, and Edward was all about tone. And right. And playing and technique, you know. So I didn't have any problem at all with the technique side, because I knew that I would just be doing my thing. But the tone, it was really helpful for me to go through that, because I had to get my tone together.
Sure. Well, you certainly did then. You certainly have now. The brand new release, Inviolate. It is out January the 28th. And Steve, where should we send people to keep up with you and get tour dates and get the record and all that stuff?
Oh, you can go to Instagram, my Instagram account, or I don't know what's going on with websites these days, but we have a great website. It's got everything there if you're interested. And Facebook, you know, we got the socials that post all the things that are going on. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Well, one more time, the name of the record is Inviolate. It is Steve Vai. It's out January 28th. And, Steve, thanks once again for joining me here on CMS Music.
Thanks so much, Chris. You're doing great.
We all want safety in our homes, but we've all removed the batteries from our smoke detectors from time to time because they're annoying and impossible to reset, right? Well, no more when you install the XSense XS01WT Smart Smoke Detector. This smoke detector works with an app on your phone to provide warnings of all potential issues. No more using a broom handle to reset it either. A simple push of a button on your phone app and it is reset. Go to https://bit.ly/cmspnsmoke and get your XSense XS01WT Smart Smoke Detector today.
Back here with another episode of Aftershocks on AftershocksTV.com. And today we got a special one, folks. We got a multi-Grammy award-winning artist and producer. And he's here to talk to us about his iconic band Toto, as well as his latest solo record titled I Found the Sun Again. The man better known as Luke, Mr. Steve Lukather, is with us. Steve, how you doing? Thanks for coming on with us.
Well, thanks for the nice intro. I'm happy to be here, man.
Awesome, man. Thank you for coming. And I guess we'll get right into it, man. I mean, you've been a pretty busy guy during this pandemic, and let's start with Toto. I mean, I know you guys got the new live album coming out June 25th. It's titled With a Little Help from My Friends.
Yeah.
It's your guys' what, eighth live record, I believe, now in your long and illustrious career. And this was from a pretty recent event, a live stream performance that you guys did this past November. It's not just a record, too. I know there's a documentary DVD included in the package. So go ahead and just tell us a bit about the live record and how this all came
together. It's a live record, but it's also a live DVD, you know. And we wanted to do a live stream to show off the new band that Joe and I put together, you know. I mean, we only had 10 days to start from scratch to get these guys. We wanted to prove that these guys could play some Toto music all over the place. We're obviously, when we go on the road, we're going to open it all up. We're going to play all the Toto big hits. We're going to play deep cuts. And then we're going to be able to do some solo stuff, because Joe and I both have solo records out. And this band is perfect for it. So we're expanding the set. David Page still stands with us, but he can't tour because medically he can't get out of the time zone. He has really intense regime of medicine that he has to stay on, and he's really healthy. If he does that, he's going to live forever. But you know, it's more important. He's 65 years old, and he's like, you know, his doctor's like, hey, you're done. He's liable to show up at a gig here and there. I mean, we always keep an extra keyboard and hopes that it'll show up. And you know, the long overseas trips are probably over for him. And Steve Picaro didn't want to tour anymore, and he wasn't pleased with how things were going. We weren't really seeing eye to eye on things, and some other, and the lawsuit and all the other stuff was just a real Debbie Downer. And then Joe was making a record, and I was going to do one. We said, well, we're on the same label. You know, I got him on the same label, and we were going to tour together anyway. And we came up with this, The Dogs of Oz was going to be, you know, we were going to transition it, but then Page and all the promoters and the agents are going to use the name. You bought a percentage of the name. You should get your money back and use it. I mean, me and Joe are the only ones left. Mm-hmm. Two of our brothers are gone in heaven. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And the rest of the guys are sidemen. Some guys weren't getting along, and it was really tough and really intense, and it was time to really change up. The band has had 15 incarnations. I've been the only guy in all of them. And that's changing out a sideman, or we've had a few different bass players because Mike got sick. We've had many different drummers, singers, background people, you know, horns, percussion, you know, it's like, but you know, when you get great musicians like we've chosen, and these are world-class guys, we didn't just like audition kids off the street. You know, I mean, this is Spud from Snarky Puppies, one of the most insane drummers out there. And John Pierce, my oldest friend in life, and you know, he was in Huey Lewis for 30 years. He was also a top college session guy. He was in our high school band. He still has ties to it, you know. Wow. And I brought in a new kid that my son Trev found for us. He plays great keyboards and sings amazing high parts. He's got a perfect pitch and stuff. He's a wonderful cat. And then the rest is you know, Xavier, who was in the band before. He was with Prince. And then you have Warren Ham, who's a multi-instrumentalist, singer, horns, the whole thing. He's an incredible asset and sings amazing. So we can pull off our rather intense vocals live, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we figure, well, you know, if there's tribute bands out there doing it, man, I mean, why don't we go out and play our music? I mean, after 45 years in this thing, I think I got a right to play the music. And it's not going to be, it's actually, well, you'll see, it's really good. It's a little different. And every time we've changed up, people are like, it's not the real Toto. It's like, well, it's all we got left, man. We're going to go out there and play, and I promise you a great show.
Sure,
it's, man. It's not Toto 78. It's not Toto 1990. It's not Toto 83. It's not Toto 2019. But it still sounds like Toto because the music played by great players plays it. It's got a different flavor, different spice, some freshness, some new energy. These guys are younger and really kick ass, and they kicking me in the ass, so that's good. It makes for a fresh vibe on stage. I mean, I wish everything stayed intact and everything was cool, but life isn't like that.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt.
And I'm sure when you're on your third divorce, when you got married the first time, you thought it was forever.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Good point. Yeah, well, I'm glad you're keeping the band together. But not only that, I mean, you've also got your solo record you put out recently. I Found the Sun Again. I personally think it's the best one you've done to date. I think your performance vocally on it is really spectacular, man. I mean, you nailed it on all the songs.
It's an honest record, the most honest record I've ever made. I mean, no rehearsal, no demos.
Yeah.
Nothing. We just came in with charts, and I hired the right guys. I mean, I had an incredible band, Greg Bissonette on drums, Jorgen Carlson from Government Mule on bass, and then John Pierce played bass on a couple of tracks. Mm-hmm. Then I had David Page on piano and organ all over the whole record, and the monster Jeff Babko playing electronic keyboards and piano. These guys got switched off on ham, all real stuff. I used my live gear, and everything was, all the solos, everything were live. There's no click tracks, and we didn't do much overdubs. I mean, if we did, it was right after the track. And then I did the lead vocal that night. Joseph helped me produce through that. And he added some background vocals, and that was it. A song a day. So the record was done in 8 days, then we mixed it.
Wow. Why did you do it that way? Was it just an experiment for you, or did you just feel so comfortable with the music you'd already written that you didn't feel like you needed to overproduce it, or what?
No, I wanted to see if I could do it.
Okay.
I mean, nobody makes records like this anymore. Old school, where we could have long fades, and every time the turnaround, there's a great new jam. So I left long fades, and you can hear the tentativeness of cats going, what are we doing next? Because it's really, we ran the charts once, made sure that the roadmap looked right, changed any notes, rehearsed the figure or something like that. This looked a little difficult. Talked about who was going to solo where, and then we ran it once, and it was almost the take. And it's like take two was the whole record. Everything we did was take two. And
okay.
I really wanted to see if I could do it, because I mean, what else? There's so many incredible guitar players out there that can just wipe the floor with me. I figured, well, let me go out and just be me and really keep it, not fix it, not move it, not computer enhance it and everything. Just make an honest record. And, you know, I wasn't trying to write hit songs for the top 40. It's not like it's going to be me, Justin Bieber, and Cardi B in our new our new hit single, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I my record company just said, play a lot of guitar on it, please.
You right. know?
So I wanted to do an improvisational record, but within the context of great songs.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What I think are great songs. That's why I picked all the covers first.
Yeah,
I wanted to take 1971, 72, and take that mentality of recording and bring it into 2020.
Right.
And, you know, some of my favorite artists, people that inspired me so much, and picked a few obscure ones and had fun with it. I heard from Jill Walls, I heard from Robin Trower, and they both love what we did. I haven't heard from Steve Winwood, but I'm hoping he dug it, man. It was really done in the spirit of, you know.
Right, certainly.
And that set the pace for the rest of stuff I wanted to write. So I just said, well, let's keep in this mentality, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of overdubs, quick vocal, make it, do it, and get it done like they used to do.
Right, certainly. Well, I will disagree with you slightly here. I don't think there's a lot of guitar players that are out there that would say that they run circles around you. I mean, come on, dude.
Oh, well, you know, I watch all the new hot shots out there, and there's some amazing people, girls, guys, everybody's getting into it, man. It's nice. Guitar is really coming on.
Sure.
The thing is that, you know, guitar players love all that stuff, but there's not a lot of women in the audience.
Right.
Taking your girlfriend to a drum clinic. It's like, oh, she's going to love that. It's a niche audience, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's a great one. I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying, yeah, I don't think I have what it takes to sustain an album like Joe Satriani or Steve Vai in terms of playing instrumental music, or Jeff Beck or somebody like who owned that stuff, you know?
Right. Well, and the thing is you've always been a band guy first. And I think that's probably why, if you would have started out doing a Satriani Vai type of a thing, you probably would have grown into it like they did. But you always were, you know.
Well, I was in way before all that happened. So, I mean, you know,
right.
When we were doing our first album, our keyboard player, David Page, came in and goes, I got something for you to hear. I'm doing a solo. I was about to do the solo on Girl Goodbye on our first album. And he drops Eruption on me.
Okay.
All right.
First, we were working on our album and their album just came out. And it blew my fucking mind. And I was like, oh, God, how does this guy do this? And I got to know this guy. And then we ended up being friends for 40 years. One of my brothers, you know, I miss him so much. It's insane. But, you know, keeping it light, you know, I don't know, man. I just kind of don't overthink anything. I jump in the deep end and I go, I work well under pressure. And I hired the right cats that I knew would deliver. Got a great engineer, Ken Freeman, who knew what I wanted to get, you know. And I accomplished what I wanted to do. It's the best reviews I've ever gotten in my life. You know, it's got a couple million streams.
Sure.
Sounds impressive. I think I made $40. But, you know, the idea in these days is you make a big noise and people listen to your music and then they come see you live.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a new paradigm. It's a new thing we all have to get used to. It used to be records. Touring was just to sell the record.
Right.
Now it's the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And since we haven't been able to tour in a year and a half, I mean, you know, I miss it like I miss drinking water, man. You know, it's like, it's been my whole life since I was 9. I was in my first band playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I never wanted to do anything else. My motivation was for music before I even realized I could make any money in it. So,
right. What do you enjoy doing more now, Steve? Do you like, obviously, you're still creating and you're still writing. Or do you like kind of being a dad to a kid that is jumping in, you know, with both feet into the quote unquote family business and seemingly succeeding?
Yeah, Trev's doing great, man. He's got a whole bunch of cool stuff. He's been producing records for other people. He's got his band, LaVara. which is he made a great record. We'll see what happens. And you know, my youngest son is autistic, so he may end up being a, you know, concert pianist, who knows, or he may end up not, you know, but he's a wonderful little dude. And then my girls, my oldest is you know, trying to get pregnant, and my other 13-year-old daughter is in junior high school discovering the joys of algebra.
Nice. Awesome. Nice. Well, so, Steve, I'm going to take you back a little bit to Toto back in the day. I know you love these questions, of course, because you get a lot of these. But, you know, I always said that Toto was arguably, you guys were the first alternative rock band, in my opinion. Because even before that, well, because think about it, before that term was ever coined, you guys were all over the place, you know, and
well,
I think
different things, man, you know, that was the thing. I mean, that's what pissed off all the critics, is that we weren't one thing.
Mm-hmm.
How can a band have Hold the Line and all this Girl Goodbye and then have Georgie Porgy?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The fact that we had any R&B in there, and we had a big hits with the stuff, and we had different singers, so it can, and you know, we didn't really like work on our look much. You know, if ever there was a band that needed a stylist, it was probably us. But you know, we didn't care about all that. We were musicians, you know what I mean? We just wanted to make music that we liked, and it struck a nerve with millions of people, and it also struck a nerve with all the hipster critics that, you know, we came out at the same time as punk rock, man. We were doomed from the start, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. Well, the thing was, I was going to ask you, do you think it's because you guys, you know, you guys were obviously studio musicians, session musicians. You'd work with so many big name artists. I mean, you can't even keep count of them. Do you think it's because you guys already had, you know, that career that has sort of allowed you guys to have more of a carefree attitude to do whatever the hell you wanted to do musically? Since, you know, if things didn't work out, if a label drops you, well, hey, whatever, we still got our session musician career, and we can always count on that as our sort of plan B. And you think that's probably why a lot of critics didn't like you, because of that?
Well, I think most critics don't even understand what a studio musician is. They have no idea that we were writing our own parts every time we play. We weren't just sitting there reading notes that were written. I mean, there was some notation, but very little. It was mostly they hired us to add our creativity to it, which is why we became first call guys, because we could deliver. And we did every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, four sessions a day, you know, so it was a wonderful time in my life. Some of the best times of my life, but wow, you know, it's not what people think. I mean, it's hard to do that. It's hard to do it with pressure and do it fast.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have an arranger's mind for it. And if they don't like what you would play the first time, you got to come up with that stuff. Bam, zoom. And not fade under the pressure. It takes some certain kind of mentality to do it. It's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
To interpret other people's ideas or give them what they want, even though they don't know what they want.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, we take that badge of pride. Matter of fact, when I met Jimmy Page, he took me aside and he said, look, man, I read an article where you said people would take you more serious if you were not a studio musician. He goes, I was a studio musician. He goes, people don't know what that is, man. You should be real proud of that gig. And I said, Jimmy, man, you just made my day. I mean, almost had a tear in my eye. And I said, can I tell people you said that? He laughed. For sure. That made me feel really a lot more, you know, I mean, really proud of my session work. I never understood why that would be a deficit.
Well, that's what I wanted to know, too. It's like, where did that stigma ever come to, the where it's like session musicians can't write great songs? I mean, to me, it's void of any logic, you know?
That's an ignorant statement. Mm. It's proven wrong so many times. It's laughable. These are people that comment about things they can't do or weren't good enough to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a certain bitterness that comes with hearing guys that have chops and stuff like that. It almost pisses them off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you look at their taste in music, it answers your own question. So, I mean, I have 45 years in total, 44. I'm still here. The whole year off of the, you know, the panic and the virus and nonsense, and it's just the world imploding. It's given me a lot of time to think about things. And I also found out I fucking hate retirement. Okay. I want to go back on the road and play music more than I want to make money, more than I just, it's what I am. I feel like I was taken out of the wild in my older age and put into a cage. I'm going, whoa, I wasn't done yet.
Right.
Put me out the pasture. Yeah, we still got a few miles left on me. I'm going out with Ringo next year too, and he's 81. He'll be 81.
Wow,
he's an inspiration to us all.
Right. No, and that I think has been the true lesson that everybody has learned from the pandemic is that, you know, well, because I know you hear this too. People are like, well, it's not that bad. You're really at home. You know, big deal. You watch TV. When you spend your time, your entire life not being at home, you might as well have just gone to prison, no? Because you can't live your life.
Well, you know, it's as close to house arrest as I've ever been.
Right.
You know? I mean, I stay at home. I mean, I go to the doctor. I'm just starting to go out. You know, I know I got my first vaccine. Take my 13-year-old daughter out for lunch every Saturday because she's so beat down with homework and her mom's real super smart and all that crap, and I'm not. You know, I'm not going to help you with schoolwork, but I can help you with everything else.
Right.
So, you know, that's all worked out good. But yeah, I don't know, it's regular. I just, you know, I like being at home. The first couple of months were awesome. Right. Sure. Wow, I'm home. Man, it's great. You know, and then after a while, it's like, I got nothing to do, man. I'm afraid of everybody. And since I got an autistic kid, I can't take any risks. Because mm-hmm. if he goes to the hospital, it's over for him. He won't stay there. It'll be mayhem. Right. I can't believe. Yeah. And so, I mean, we get tested every week. And like I said, I got my first jab. I'm going to get my second one. Then I'll be cool.
Sure.
You know, as long as I don't grow the third penis, I should be fine.
Well, and if you do, then maybe you will want to join one of those Cardi B type bands that brings all the chicks to the shows.
No, it works great, man. If you squeeze it right, you get the, you know, you get the antiseptic lotion. You know what I mean?
Nice. Well,
okay, kids. Sorry, I'm a little bit twisted.
That's all good. Well, I have to imagine with you itching to go out there that you threw your cell phone when you got the call from your management saying that the Dogs from Oz tour was pushed back yet again. You know, talk about that, man.
Here's the thing. I'm the management, so you know, I get it right away.
Okay.
I work a lot. I have a great team, Steve Karras and Keith Hagen, and then I work with obviously the promoters, the agents, and the budgets, and do all that stuff and make sure we're doing all the techniques to deal with the crew and stuff like that. You know, it just works better and we save money and we make more money. So, and I'm, you know, if I do stuff, I got to sit there and, well, you know, sometimes managers have a tendency to like, okay, the worst routing ever. Like, you know, you have the 5 a.m. wake up call to the plane or whatever. It's like a beat down. But if I'm managing this and I see how we're going to travel, I know after doing this all this long, what it's going to be like and what's feasible and what's not. Mm-hmm. When you got to sit next to everybody and you're the one that booked it and it goes south, believe me, you get a lot of eyeballs staring at you like, are you fucking kidding me? So I'm real careful. Yeah.
I don't doubt it. So Steve, I'm going to bring up, I know, a topic you love to hear about, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. When I see Patti Smith and three-chord Green Day in there, and, you know, Steely Dan, Hall & Oates, very similar style to Toto had, and you guys aren't even up for nomination. It's pretty criminal to me. No,
I mean, it's,
you
know? It's a real hate from that
man. It is. It's a young one. Is it from that Rolling Stone? You guys turning down Rolling Stone years ago?
Yeah,
you
think that's but come on, man. It's been 44 years, man.
Sure.
And they still can't help throwing a cheap shot in. Mm-hmm. You know, they put me down in the Ringo article. It's like they can't even say anything nice, even if we get a backhanded compliment. You know what I mean? So I mean, I'm in the Musicians Hall of Fame. In Nashville, which is harder to get into because it's only musicians can vote. Like, you know, it's like the Grammys and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's like there's just too many people making decisions and too many categories and too much. There's just too many. The entry level to make a record is if you buy a laptop and have GarageBand, you can tell mom and dad you're a record producer now.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just entry level too much. There's nobody, no gatekeepers. You know, they stop A&R people from going like, you know what, you got talent, but come back to me in a couple of years. They just like make up a slick thing and fix everything and auto-tune and you get what sounds like a record. If you don't have any good songs, well, that's going to be a deterrent. But if you even make something that sounds good, but you got to play it live, it's never going to sound like that.
No, you're right. And just real quick, I live in Cleveland, so I can tell you for an absolute fact, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in its city has no value. nobody around here is like, holy shit, I can't listen to Toto anymore, because they're not in. Everybody downplays it the same way that they do probably when you see the announcement that it's Madonna and Dr. Dre and whatever.
I find some of the choices and who they like. Take a band like Deep Purple, you had Steve Morse, who's been playing guitar for longer than Richie was in the band. They wouldn't let him, but they let everybody in who ever played in the Grateful Dead. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. You know, you go, well, where's the criteria? I mean, in sports, if you hit 500 home runs, you know, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame, regardless of how they feel about you. You know, where's the stats don't count. It's a bunch of angry hipsters going, I like this, I don't like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
And they're like 75 years old now. You know what I mean? It's like, really, you're the tastemakers now, guys?
Good point. You know what?
I mean, hey, everybody would love to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What does it mean? It means you pay $25,000 for your seat to get to be able to talk, and then they'll tell you what you have to play and what you get into. It's hardly... It's just a weird... click. I'm not gonna say anything bad about it, but they've never been good to us. Why would they start now?
Yeah. No, good point. Good point. Well, Steve, I mean, it's gotta be, you know, looking at your career, man, you've accomplished so much in your 44-45 years.
Yeah, well, there's my reward. I've had a really long, wonderful career, worked with some of the most incredible musicians ever, artists, anywhere from three of the four Beatles to Elton, Miles Davis, the list goes on and on, man. I play with any kind of style. I mean, I'm a big fan of hard rock. I mean, that's really where I come from anyway. But I also love Steely Dan and jazz and funk, and I studied all this stuff to be a studio player, so that stuff crept into our music, because that's we love Motown, we love all the great 70s funk records, Earth, Wind, and Fire, but we also loved Steely Dan. Was our top. Jeff was in Steely Dan when I was in high school. So I mean, we realized that was the level of musicianship you had to have to be a studio musician. If you're just a rock musician, you're not. If I can play three or four chords through a Marshall and I look the part, I'm in a band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I spent 14 years practicing and playing as many gigs as I could before I was ever in a recording studio. So
Good point. Yeah.
4 years later, I was making real records.
Yeah. Well, you said you guys are a musician's band. You weren't a rock star band. And I mean, you guys,
we had no image in per se. There wasn't one particular frontman. I've managed to step out front by default because I'm not afraid to talk to the audience. And I'm, I just have the personality for it. And that's the only reason. I mean, Jeff and Mike passed, man. I mean, they were such a huge... I mean, Jeff and Dave started the band.
Right.
And then added all the rest of us, and... we're going to go on the road in the post and say, David Page presents Toto, the Dogs of Oz Tour, Lukather, Williams, and then all the rest of the guys in the band, So, I mean, there'll be a differentiation of people will know that it's not the same band as last time, but then this DVD comes out... And the reaction has been really great. I mean, sure, there are people saying, this is just a cover band. It's like, when you get the bands that are this old, people pass away, people are sick, they retire, they don't want to do it anymore, they get sick, they can't travel. And there are other guys like me who were born to be in this life. And Joseph is the same way, man. I mean, once we can start working, I don't want to stop.
Right.
Yeah. What is there left?
I still love this, man.
Sure. What's left for you to accomplish now? I mean, you've done so much. I mean, really, at this point in your career,
I want to get back on the road and prove this new band.
Okay.
And I want to go out on a real high if we're going to go out.
Okay. Sure. Sounds
with
good.
With respect to all the old members, and I mean, we're paying respect to everybody that's ever been in the band. We're just the only guys left with the credentials to be able to pull it off.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
I still believe in the music, and I miss the people that aren't around anymore.
Right. Which makes total sense. Luke, when you put this lineup together, or any of the lineups that there has been with Toto, what is the defining factor? I mean, Toto has always been a virtuoso band. Everybody's always been that level of a player.
Is that
first and foremost, or is just simply getting along?
There's a lot of things. I mean, first off, you do have to be able to play anything and have a great pocket and have a great idea of sound, you know, what they add, their own personalities to it, you know, and the confidence level, and also the vibe as a human being you got to live with on a bus or an airplane for 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. That's really important, because you know what happened the last time, there was some festering and people not getting along, and it, man, that makes it real hard to be on the road. And
a lot of
people were blaming me for shit I never did, and I don't know, it got ugly. And you know, after we lost the lawsuit, Dave, just, we gotta use the name, man. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, why not? I mean, there's bands out there with no original members.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, not everybody who starts a band wants to stay in a band for the 55 years, you know.
Sure. No, you're right. And it's interesting that aside from Toto, when you get away from Toto, I'm gonna guess that you guys planned, you and Joseph planned the releases and everything at the same
time. Yeah, well, I hooked it up. I got him. I had a deal with Mascot, and I said, Joe, you got to get on a label. We'll make, and we took these pictures with Toto on tour in Austria. And there's this photographer that took pictures of us in a very dated, like, looked like mug shots. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we wanted to use those, but he wanted like $1 grillion for it. Like, you know, nobody has the rights to make a black and white picture. We can do it. So we just wanted to do it as a goof. It's sort of an inside joke.
Right.
And we both look like my album's called I Found the Sun Again. And it looked like we'll never see the sun again. And, you know, and those, you know, it was the same thing, but it's just, when you put them together, it really sticks out. Like, what are these? What's this? You know, from a marketing standpoint, it was kind of fun. But, you know, no, I'm not miserable. I'm actually quite happy right now.
Very good. Were any of these songs, especially the stuff that you guys kind of collaborated with, were they originally Toto songs that because of time? Or
no, because we knew Toto was going to end on October 20th, 2019.
Okay.
And Joseph was already working on stuff at home, and he was going to, I'm going to really get into this and finish this. And I go, well, I'm going to go in and make one, and we should go out together.
Okay.
You know, I just got a thing, the notice update.
Yep. Don't worry about it. Nope. Okay. Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you is, I'm going to go back to that somber place just for a second. I mean, obviously the world lost Eddie Van Halen, you know, certainly his family did, certainly guys like you that were very, very close to him, you know, have a different relationship than the rest of us that just worshiped his
that one hit hard.
Ability.
That one hit hard.
For you personally, what do you miss more? His talent, his friendship?
I mean, everybody misses the greatest guitar player and, or, you know, one of the greats of all time.
Sure.
Nobody's going to argue that point. But I knew him as a friend. When we got together, we weren't talking about, you know, what kind of guitar strings do you use. Occasionally, we play each other new stuff that we were working on. And, you know, it was fun to do that. We'd hang out and have a bunch of laughs and talk about life, man, you know. I love him as a human being. I love Al, his brother. Same. I've always also got along with everybody, you know what I mean? I got my own band problems. I don't need to – I'm like Switzerland with these bands, you know. I like Sammy and Mike. I know that there's issues with the family, but I love the family. Obviously, those guys are my brothers, you know, but I don't have any bad, you know, it's not my place to fight somebody else's war.
Right.
I get on with somebody and they're great to me. That's the criteria. Unless something really totally awful happened that I might be in the middle of, that's something else. But like I said, I got my own band and litigation issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Any interest, Luke, of you guys doing a documentary? Because I think if there's a story that needs to be told out there, I really think it's a total story.
No, that'll never happen.
You're not interested in that?
That'll
no.
never happen. There's too many parties in it that are, it would just be stillborn before it got out of the water.
Okay.
Who's going to be in control? What can I use? What can I not use? The, you know, widows that, you know.
Gotcha.
Okay. Want metal? I don't want to do that because there's just too many people that don't get along and don't like each other.
True.
It would be impossible. I'm doing a documentary, right? I was really way into it. Sony wanted me to do a documentary about my life, and I'm sneaking some of the Toto shit in there. But I have no right to tell the Toto story by myself.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote my book, and I gave my side of the story. Mm-hmm. Other people have other sides of their story, you know? when we were doing the box set and we were remastering all the old records, particularly the first three that needed it the most, brought those back to life. We were sitting in the room talking about all this stuff and just our whole lives and our careers and everything, how much time has passed and how it was like, this is your life. You know, we heard things we haven't heard in years because I don't sit around and listen to every Toto record, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm always looking forward, but you know, when I have to go back and learn something, I do. And when we had that experience, it was very emotional for us because we were able to see all the different versions and how the band was and how it sounded, how it changed a little bit. And you know, we're still here. I mean, everybody's tried to kill this band, and we won't die.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, you're definitely not going anywhere. One last one, Steve, before we let you go. I want to go back to your son for a minute. Yeah. I love the LeVarth stuff. I mean, Carousel shared it with me, and it is just so good, man. And it doesn't feel like a copycat of, hey, here's the son picking up his dad's legacy. You know, it really has its own flavor.
No, he has his own, completely his own style. And he's real tasty, man. He's a real... He likes to think things out real well. He's a really great, has produced arranger ears. You know what I mean? I've gone many times, what the fuck did you do that? Because he's not doing it in a traditional way.
Right.
You know, if I thought he was doing it wrong, I'd tell him. But when I started going, you should take lessons, you should do this, I realized it would change everything he was doing. And there's a million guys out there that can dazzle you with the shred. You know what I mean? But can they write a song?
Mm-hmm.
My son's a great songwriter.
Sure.
Melody, and he's influenced by, you know, Journey and Us and Foreigner and all that. He loves all that old classic rock, big production, big vocals, melodic rock. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm not ashamed of it.
Right. Nor should he be.
It's not like he's copying my shit or anything like that, you know?
Right. Do you counsel him at all, or do you just kind of sit back and just say, okay, this is cool, or I would do this different, or maybe not even that?
I mean, he plays me what he does. Well, he asks what I think, and I give him an honest answer and stuff like that. But what he's doing is so great. I just sit back and laugh. I go, wow. Plus, he's become a great engineer. He's got a studio at his house. I mean, he's learning all the tools of the trade, production, engineering, writing, you know, playing and dealing with the music business, which is the most unpleasant part of it.
Sure. Definitely.
But it's a very, it's really important to stay on that, man.
Right. Do you think that he can outlive your legacy? And what I mean by that is there's been several, you know, Lauren Harris, Steve Harris's daughter, Blaze Snyder, D. Snyder's.
Son. I understand that. But see, my kid, he's got 20 years of dues. I mean, he co-wrote Hailstorm's first hit single. Oh. He's been on the road with What's So Not.
Okay.
As a guitarist, you know, doing all these, headlining, you know, Lollapalooza. I mean, he's been on the road. When he was in high school, he left high school to be Lindsay Lohan's musical director, like 20 years ago or something like that. When he did the MTV New Year's Eve Awards or something like that. So he's not green. I've had him in the studio working on my records and co-writing and playing. You know, he's in the studio with Lee Sklar, Abe Jr., me. And you know, it's like he's holding his own hard. And I'm real proud of him. I've always dragged him in the studio. Before that, you know, I was raising him myself. And like, and I grab my daughter and my son. I go, yeah, okay, fall asleep. Here's some money for the video game machines. Here's, you know, get a pizza or something like that. And then sit on the front couch and crash or do your homework or something, you know. So they grew up in the studios. My daughter didn't take it, the music thing. She didn't go her way. She wants to be a mom.
Okay.
She's married to a wonderful guy, but Trev has always had the bike. I took him on the road when he was like 13 over to Europe. He did a European tour. He just came father and son, you know. I let him come out and play a little bit on the last song. And, you know, he got a taste of what 10,000 people screaming, you know.
Feels
like. And, you know, all wishes of him being a doctor or a lawyer were gone at that point. Because at one point, he had the photographer's 14-year-old daughter in the dressing room with her top off during the middle of our set. That's nice. My boy. That's my boy. Don't tell your mom. Don't tell your mom. I ruined his life, and then he had to be, you know, he got the itch, man. And he really worked hard. He's still working hard. He works at every. So proud of him, like a burst into flame.
Very nice. Awesome. Well, you're obviously quite the hard worker yourself, man. Toto, 45 years. Steve Lukather, the new album, the new live one is With a Little Help from My Friends. That one's out June 25th. You can also get the new solo album, I Found the Sun Again, which I believe is out there right at this moment.
It's out there. It's out right now. It's been out a month.
So people can listen to that for the next month or so until With a Little Help from My Friends comes. And of course, 2022 is Dogs of Oz tour. So Luke, thanks so much for joining us here on After.
Thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for checking out this episode of The Classic Metal Show. Get all of our episodes uncensored at www.theclassicmetalshow.com. Join us weekly from 9 p.m. till 3 a.m. Eastern at www.cmsradio.net. Participate in the live chat room at www.chatandkill.com. Once again, thank you for checking out The Classic Metal Show with Neely and Chris. Hail and kill. Fuck you, pal. And hand job. What's going on, everybody? It's Chris Aiken, and just wanted to share a very limited edition of autographed books that I found that I am selling right now over at Chris Aiken Books. I've got this one. I know it doesn't look like it has anything on the cover, but it's got a lot inside. This is my book, Cause and Effect Metallica, about the Metallica Black album. It's one of my more successful books, and I ran out of copies long ago to sign and sell, but I found a few, and I do mean very few. So if you want one, there's like, maybe five of them that are available for sale as of today. So get it now over at chrisaikenbooks.com, chrisaikenbooks.com. Cause and Effect Metallica, on sale now.